You're listening to episode 27 of IDRA Class Notes.
Developing a really good, honest relationship with your teachers is very, very important. If you have that trust and that capability to listen and work together as a team, it's going to be evident to the people that come into this school.
Hello, my name is Hector Bojorquez, and I'm pleased to welcome you to another installment of the Intercultural Development Research Association's Class Notes podcast. IDRA is an independent, private, nonprofit organization dedicated to strengthening public schools so they work for all children. Our podcast series focuses on educational issues to inform teachers and administrators about strategies, successes, concerns, and best practices that help us achieve the goal of creating public schools that value and work for all children. We would like to hear any of your comments and suggestions. At the end of this podcast, we will give you details on how to contact us. You can also subscribe to our podcast series by going to www.idra.org/podcasts. and using our RSS feeds or our email alerts. Today, we will be talking to Principal Ms. Sandy Dolan from Harold Keller Elementary in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana. I've had the pleasure of working with her staff for the past 2 years on integrating technology into all content areas. IDRA has also been involved with Ms. Dolan in implementing the FLAIR model at Harold Keller Elementary for the past 7 years. FLAIR stands for Focusing on Language and Academic Instructional Renewal. This model increases cognitive growth and academic achievement for all students, including linguistically diverse students, through an intensive language across the curriculum program that is created by means of sustained and intensive campus-based professional development. Now, the students at Harold Keller's have achieved many great things. Their scores for the past 2 years have currently ranked them second in all of Jefferson Parish. This is no small feat. Congratulations, Ms. Dolan, on this. Ms. Dolan has played an immense leadership role in leading Harold Keller to excellence. Because of her efficacy and dedication to providing learning opportunities for students and teachers, and her efforts in creating organizational structures that allow for leadership growth, we are featuring her on this episode of IDRA's Class Notes. Hello, Ms. Dolan. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here today. I'd like to ask you, as an administrator, what is your vision for excellence for students, parents, and staff? For example, when you walk into classrooms, when you walk around your school, what do you see your students and staff doing?
The first thing I look for is student involvement in every aspect of the school, socially, emotionally, behaviorally, academically, because it's not just one focus that you look at, it's the whole child. And if they're engaged in the academic part of it, they're also going to be engaged emotionally and socially in a positive way. I think that the school has developed a reputation over the years for wanting to reach out to every type of child that comes across our campus. And the parents feel the same way. The staff, for a vision of excellence for them, is to take as much as they can that's useful for them in their classrooms and bring out the best of every child. It's paramount that they engage. I know that's a new phrase that's out on the market now, but engagement is so crucial. And if they're not engaged as a learner themselves, they won't engage the children to the fullest capacity. I try very hard to make them realize that they're lifelong learners with all of our professional development that we go through. That's very heady sometimes, but they really get involved. And by using what they have and sharing at the adult level, then it's easier to show the children through modeling exactly what excellence is. The parents have played a real integral part in as much as we have many children who are on permit here. As you know, we have about a third of our population who want to come to this school. So I think that speaks volumes about the reputation we have in making that commitment to excellence to the students, and also my personal commitment to continue excellence with the teachers.
Oh, that's wonderful. Knowing that your campus has been so successful in its ranking and outcomes for students, as you look back, What have been or some of the biggest challenges you've had to face as an administrator, and how have you addressed them?
Over the years, we've had such a multicultural, diverse population. We're getting even more diverse because of some different ethnicities who are coming into our schools. And I think that we're having to stay very much in tune and on top of best practices to meet the needs of all of those different ethnicities. We have so many cultures represented here. Of course, after Katrina, we lost many, many of those children, but we still have an underlying belief that all of those needs have to be met by all of those students. And it's a development across the board of not only what they're bringing to us as gifts from their culture, but what can we do to extend that in the schools. That's been difficult. We have a lot of parents who are non-English speakers, and so that's been very interesting, getting them on board and trusting us. And to have them want to come back year after year is a real testament to what my teachers are doing in the classroom, and also what my other students are doing to welcome those other children from the other countries. It's been an incredible process over the years watching all of this unfold, and I think it reached a crescendo once we got involved with FLAIR and now with technology to make sure that we tap into a lot more resources for those children. The teachers are very, very open to all different cultures, and I think that that is such a gift that many schools don't have.
So as I'm listening to you, what I'm hearing is that you're constantly having to reassess what you as an institution, as the leader of an institution, have to do in order to address the needs of your community.
Yes, and I think that constant reassessment gives us new insight as to what our needs are going to have to be, even 2 or 3 years from now, because of the type of children that we're getting from other countries. One of the biggest upsets was the hurricane, and I know people get tired of hearing that, but we lost so many of our Hispanic population, and it was very disturbing to my teachers. And I think this is what probably touched me very much, is that when we came back, we lost a whole complex of families, and it was like we lost a huge part of our culture. And so when the new children started coming in from Korea and China and some of the other continents and countries, it helped fill the void of the children that we had lost. And I think that is just incredible for a school to feel like they have lost the culture of their family when people don't return. It was a big paradigm shift for us.
Right, and I think underlying all this is the assumption that you value everybody who comes into your doors.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Without exception.
Great. Now, let me ask you something else. What inspires you and energizes your leadership?
I have to say my teachers and the kids. My teachers never cease to amaze me. We have built such a relationship over the years that they ask to go to things, they want to further their knowledge, they're very open and receptive to changes that come across the board. Our plates are always full, often by design, but I have very few teachers who ever tell me no for anything, because they know how important it is to me. And I don't ask them to do much that I would not do myself, and I think that helps, I hope it helps model to them so they can go and in turn model to the children. If they see the teachers working so incredibly hard and with such dedication, they in turn want to do something to make sure that they're following through with the things that they've asked them to do. The kids are tremendous and they keep me going. My population has shrunk, but I think I know just about everybody on campus now, and you can walk down the hall and just get a feeling that they want to be here. You don't hear crosswords. I know it sounds like pie in the sky, but you don't. You just don't hear crosswords, and they greet you, and they are eager to do things for you, and you walk into the classroom, and it's such a gift to be able to watch things unfold in the classrooms. And when you and Juanita are here, having them have such a relationship for people coming because you all certainly are a gift to us, coming on campus, you're part of the family, and they want to do things for you too. So it's just, that energizes me, and it inspires me, and it makes me keep going. I could have retired, but I don't want to. I really enjoy what I do, and I enjoy working with people.
I'm struck by what you said about your teachers inspiring you. What sort of structures have you set for your teachers so that they may grow in their roles? What is it that you've done specifically? For example, I know that you have leadership teams. Mm-hmm. Could you just tell me a little bit about that?
I do. I started the leadership team process about 5 years ago, and I handpicked 5 teachers with distinctly different personalities and gifts to offer. And we started just brainstorming. We looked at data, went out and ate together. We just brainstormed lots of ideas. We planned our yearly calendar. We became involved, kind of like a think tank. And from that first meeting 5 years ago, we have now had about 17 people rotate through the leadership team. I don't select them anymore. They select people to replace them or to bring new people on. And I told them to choose someone with the philosophy that you know that will sustain our growth over time at the school and also be able to institute our beliefs. And I step back and I don't have any say-so. And they always find the person that I would have selected. Because what I'm doing, in essence, is training teachers to be leaders in the school, and they have stepped up to the plate every single time. They are held in high esteem by the rest of the faculty. There's no in-house concern over who's going to be on the leadership team, because some people are very comfortable with that, and other people are comfortable as followers and working in other capacities. But we set the goal every year of what our idea is. And we have fun with it, too, because we have themes every year. And I think that rallies everyone around a central point. But that leadership team is incredible to me. They're a big support. I don't have an assistant principal. So when I speak to them or just brainstorm or pull them on the side in the hallway or before or after school and bounce things off of them, and they in turn do the same with me, it creates dialogue that spreads throughout the campus just naturally. And it's just a real comfortable feeling. They're very eager to want to do things to make the school and the students successful. I'm very proud of them.
I asked this, and I wanted to discuss it, because very often systemic campus reform, when it hangs on a leader, and that leader does not put in place any sort of or structures that would live past their retirement or whatever, it seems to flutter away. But it's from what you're telling me, you've kind of built something in that will live long past what, however long you stay.
Funny you should mention that. I'm doing it kind of deliberately, because I was reading an article in one of my journals recently, and it said when an administrator retires, don't wait so long that it's hard for someone to come behind you, not necessarily because of the excellence that you may have shown, but because of the longevity. And I've deliberately tried very hard to put into place people who are not only seasoned veteran teachers, but the newcomers too, who I know will be here, to pass along not my ideals, but the ideals that everybody has worked towards to reach common ground. And so I've been real deliberate. I didn't think you'd pick up on that, but I've been real deliberate about making sure that my leadership team is sustained over time, because you can't fly a plane alone. You have to have a co-pilot and lots of people behind you. And if you don't, it becomes all about you. And this isn't all about me. This is totally not all about me. This is about what my teachers are doing and the kids. And they know that, because I let them know that all the time. But it's really, really important that they understand that they can do this whether I'm here or not.
Very good. And how do you think that this leadership process has impacted? Well, obviously it's impacted student success. Mm-hmm. But even classroom practice, when you go through classrooms, do you see anything where you see that that process has also impacted what's going on in classrooms.
Yes, and I think I've seen that more recently as we're picking things apart and seeing what works for our clientele, but also finding the best practices that are research-based that we know that have been successful elsewhere. I know Kagan is used in many, many places. I've had more than several teachers trained in Kagan, and they've come back and they've taught the other teachers how to utilize those strategies and methods. We also are studying under Phil Schlecky now at our school. All of the administrators in the system have gone to more than several conferences with Phil Schlecky, the Institute, and his belief is that if you don't work on your work and make it meaningful to engage them, then they're not going to reach their full capacity. So last year and this year, we have been working really hard. I'm a convert. I really believe in working on the work and making sure that we constantly analyze what we're doing and our presentation is scrutinized from within, and we do a lot of self-reflection about what is working and why is it working and why we need to toss that kind of clean house or have a garage sale with some of our old ideas and bring new things into it. I also think that if you don't know your data and you don't know how to read it and understand it, and it's taken me a while to understand it, you can't have a really good conversation about where you need to go and changing that culture of learning in the school. So knowing the data, working on the work, and being engaged as a leader, again, you become a role model for, if you want them to do it, then you have to kind of walk the walk, and that's what I've worked really hard at trying to do.
Okay. Now, apart from this, now I'd like to ask you something about a topic that's always near and dear to my heart, which has to do with parental involvement. And I'd like to ask you specific things that are going on in your school that deal with parental involvement. For example, what practices do you use to engage parents and sustain their involvement?
I have to go back a few years. When I first came here 9 years ago, there was very little parent involvement from our ELL students. Very little. And that disturbed me. So we continued with what they were doing, and we just added things. We started translating our newsletters. We started translating all of the communications that go home to the students. One of the things that I felt really crucial was to build their comfort level in coming on campus. Many of them didn't speak English, and I don't speak their language, so we used a lot of miming, and we used their children as translators, and I think it raised their comfort zone to know that we were willing to try. My secretary took Spanish classes to show effort and good faith, that we wanted them to know that there was someone here that was trying to understand and work with them in every capacity. Programs that we had at school, we tried to incorporate, well, we encouraged the children to really talk it up at home. A lot of the parents, whether they were our diverse children or our Anglo children, some parents don't feel comfortable coming on campus because of their past experiences in school. And it's hard to erase those memories as an adult, so we often tried to use the children as a catalyst to get them to come in. We had classroom opportunities. We opened up our computer lab. We had 100-day celebrations, many of the things that many, many schools already do. But we tried very hard to make it a personal invitation to our parents who did not feel comfortable coming on campus. Now, we have parents coming on campus all the time. They do not feel bad about coming on campus. They feel comfortable approaching me outside at carpool. They feel comfortable in the bus line. I'll see them in the community, and it's not all of them speak English, but I've tried to pick up Spanish or whatever the language is, and they've tried very hard to meet us halfway to learn English a little bit better too. And it's just been a really good opportunity for me. When our Redwood School was in progress, I would go over and visit the school where we had tutoring going on before the hurricane, and they had family classes, and I was the first principal that had ever visited, and I couldn't understand why, because it was such a neat thing going on over there. And I think that kind of surprised them. And that was a turning point. Once I went over there for a few times and I sat in the tutoring classes and I had dinner with them, they started coming over here. And the word spread immediately in the community. It's sad that we lost that, the little school, as we called it, because that was a good community pivotal point for those parents to feel comfortable in going.
Well, what I've noticed that even your teachers in their classroom practices have extended this drive to greater parental involvement, even with their teaching. I've noticed this with one teacher in particular who sent home basically DVDs of one of the classroom activities, which was a puppet show that the kids had created themselves. They sent them home, and not only was it sent home just to view, as you'd have, as is traditionally done, but with a survey, sort of asking the parents to watch it with the kids and respond back. But what I found striking about this is that this particular instructor asked for opinions concerning whether they thought that this was an effective lesson to begin with.
She put herself out there, and you and I had spoken about that one time. She took a risk, and I have a lot of risk takers here, but she really took a risk. She sent home a 2-page evaluation where the students and the parents had to respond to the DVD and give their input on what it was about, why were they doing it, the different topics. It was on fables and morals. And she was a little reticent about doing it, but she knew that if she went to that next level, it would be totally incorporating the parents' thoughts or constructive critique. And the responses from the parents were incredible. Some of the things that she sent one to me too, and I actually filled one out with them. And some of the same things I was saying on my sheet or evaluation, the parents were also saying, and I thought that that was a real validation of her work, that they really did take the time to look at it and get a feel for what the children were trying to do. It was a wonderful experience.
I was very impressed with how multi-layered her questions were, because it allowed for parental involvement as far as having the kids and the parents work together towards a comprehension of what was going on in the activity itself, but the evaluation of it as well. It was very impressive that way. I'd like to congratulate you on your leadership role and that particular instructor as well.
She's outstanding.
She's very good, yes. Also, I have two more questions for you. One is, what recommendations would you make to fellow administrators about moving a campus student outcomes from mediocrity to magnificence?
Personally, the relationship that you have with your staff and faculty is incredible. You have to really build a very strong communication. You have to have strong commitment from them. You have to value their input. I know for new administrators starting out, and I did this probably for the first 2 or 3 years, as I tended to micromanage out of fear. Fear of failure, fear of not having the people over me, you know, ask me what's going on. And I sat down through the School Leadership Center and had them fill out a survey on me and my leadership style. And it was very revealing about, and one of the things it did come across was micromanaging. And I allowed myself to have them critique things that they wanted to see in a leader. And, you know, a lot of people would be a little scared about doing that because it might tend to go towards more frivolous things, I guess, for lack of a better word, but they really zeroed in on things that they wanted to see me do, you know, to accept more input, to work with them on the different grade levels. They gave me the idea of the leadership team, actually, and it's been a real growing experience. So I guess starting 9 years ago to today, if I was to do a timeline, I think that it would be really full of the many things that I've been able to learn from my teachers and learn from other administrators. Trust is the next big word that comes to mind. I trust them implicitly, and I think it's mutual. I think there's a lot of trust in the decisions that I have to make. They're not always palatable. Sometimes we have to make really tough decisions and have those really hard conversations that aren't comfortable. but it keeps us from stagnating, and it really promotes the growth. And we've had to have some hard conversations over the years. My push from the top down, so to speak, because of our focus in the parish, is critical, and imparting that and trying to pull out that knowledge base from the teachers to move on has been really critical. And if you don't have the trust and you don't have the communication and you don't have a common belief or vision, then you're really going to be stuck. And it's not going to be very fun.
You know, I've noticed that in many campuses across the areas that I've worked in, that very often everybody is under the crunch of performing on a state assessment in order to meet NCLB standards or to meet state standards. And very often what happens, campuses stop taking risks. That doesn't happen here. That doesn't happen here, and I think that's very much due to a lot of things that you've said today. People are more likely to take risks on this campus than I've seen in other campuses. What you just mentioned, for example, about your teachers. Perfect example. I see it all the time when I walk into your classrooms. They are willing to try new things. Mm-hmm. Because you've laid that out. You have expectations, but they feel comfortable in trying new things, even though they know they have the state assessment that they're always having to worry about, as everybody seems to be across the nation. But for that, that's congratulations again. I'd like to ask you, give me one or two, you choose, big ideas you hope the listener will leave this discussion with.
Developing a really good, honest relationship with your teachers is very, very important. If you have that trust and that capability to listen and work together as a team, or I like to say a family, but they always say I sound a little cheesy when I say that, I think it's going to be evident to the people that come into this school. When you and Juanita have come in, you've said that so many times, it makes me feel really good, because that's one goal that I feel like I've accomplished to date, because we're always evolving. But to have that relationship with the adults on campus, and then to pass that through our actions and our words onto our students, because they're going to be the ones who go home and talk to their parents about what they're learning, how they're being spoken to, how they're being treated, what the teachers are doing to make learning exciting and fun. There are ambassadors outside of the school. So once the teachers work incredibly hard together as a team and a unit with a common vision and belief, and we pass that on to the kids, then that's passed on to the parents, and the parents come in and they see for themselves what can be offered to them as a parent and what can be offered to their child as a student. Having that relationship with a faculty is, if you have it, you'll know it, because I don't go anywhere and complain about my teachers at all. They are absolutely fantastic, and it wears me down to hear negative things. If we do have our little times that we have to have those hard conversations, they are not done on a personal basis. They're done on exactly what is for the good of the child. And I really, in all honesty, have to say we've had many of those conversations, and I feel like what we've accomplished is a direct result from the conversations that we've had to have over the years.
Right. In closing, I'd like to mention something, what you just said. It's very obvious you speak highly of your staff, and one of the things that I've noticed, you speak highly of your staff also in the context of what you want them to do for the kids. It's amazing. I'd like to thank you participating in this podcast and sharing your expertise with others.
Thank you.
Hopefully this information will get out to a lot more people.
Well, thank you.
And to our listening audience, please send your comments to podcast@idra.org, or go to our webpage, idra.org/podcast, and you may fill out an online comment form on there. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org. or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.